Welcome back to Public Address Radio on Radio Live. Free trade and the free trade agreements which allow it to happen between nations is a curious concept. On the face of it, great, we all love freedom, and when backed up, as it inevitably is, with Treasury predictions of multi-million or billion-dollar windfalls, well, what's not to like? But to critics, free trade agreements represent a threat to sovereignty, threat to security, even the economy they are supposed to bolster. No Ordinary Deal is a collection of academic essays critiquing the current big agreement New Zealand is negotiating, the Trans-Pacific Partnership. The book's editor, Jane Kelsey, joins us now. Welcome.
Lovely to be here.
Well, can you explain briefly the background to the Trans-Pacific Partnership agreement?
Well, New Zealanders will know that successive governments have been falling over themselves for years to have a free trade agreement with the US. And in a way, this is that agreement enveloped in a much bigger one, because there are now 9 countries involved in these negotiations. And it's a bit misleading to actually refer to it as a trade agreement, because it's really an agreement about the rights of foreign investors, to guarantee those rights and to make those rights enforceable against the New Zealand government and other governments, not in our domestic courts but in foreign courts. And so the book was written to try to break down some of the mythologies around free trade agreements and tell people what was really going on.
When you say... Let's just sort of separate this discussion a little bit from a pure free trade agreement with the new concepts we're introducing. You're outspoken often with regard to free trade agreements. Free trade is a concept you don't take issue with, though. I mean, things like CER, is it a positive thing for our countries?
I think we need to reflect on the elements of trade. None of us are opposed to trade, obviously, and facilitating sensible trade. But trade policies need to be balanced. And one of the problems with these agreements is that they screen out, or they give priority to the removal of restrictions on international trade ahead of labour, environment, social, regional development, and a whole range of other dimensions. And that's problematic because they're very hard to change. And they can be enforced on our government by other governments by imposing quite serious penalties, economic penalties. And it's been an article of faith that they have to be good for us. Yet even if we look at the economic statistics, you know, our trade imbalance and our balance of payments and all of those other technical things aren't looking too hot. And so it was a fashion, and it's a fashion that is still... got a lot of currency, but it's also got now an increasing number of questions being asked.
With regard to the TPPA, New Zealand already has free trade agreements with all but one of the countries involved, which is the US. The US already has FTAs with most of the states in the TPPA. So is it just the intersection of New Zealand and the US that makes this concerning, or are some of these free trade agreements we already have, like with Singapore and so forth, are they already pretty bad for us?
Well, there are big problems with those existing agreements. Some people might remember that, for example, when the sale of Auckland Airport was being proposed to a Canadian pension fund, Labor decided that wasn't such a great idea. But then they were told by Treasury, well, you can't actually legislate to stop the sale because that will breach the agreement with Singapore. And so they then developed this fiction that it had something to do with sensitive rural land, because that was a loophole through which we could impose some sort of new rules on foreign investment. And that's one of the key issues that we've been trying to highlight in the book in relation to this agreement. You know, we've now got a lot of rethinking about foreign investment, and we know that some of the privatisations weren't great, and that there have been questions about sale of rural land, but also other strategic assets. If we sell Kiwi Bank or we sell TVNZ, what restrictions are we allowed to impose? And this agreement would severely constrain what we could do there. And so we need to look at the restrictions it imposes on us, but also the power that it gives to overseas investors. And, you know, with Warners and The Hobbit in our recent memories, we know the leverage that the threat simply of one company saying that it will take its production out of New Zealand. And then we change our labour laws and we give them big tax write-offs. So if, in fact, we're going to not only empower the entertainment industry of US, but the pharmaceutical companies and the tobacco companies and the banks and insurance companies to put that kind of leverage on our decisions about what domestic laws we have, that's a pretty serious set of questions we need to debate.
There are also cases where the little guys had a win, through the WTO, for example, the group of nations led by Brazil actually got a win on generic drugs, so that people could actually have access to lower cost pharmaceuticals. So it is possible sometimes in these agreements that the right thing happens, isn't it?
Well, the Brazil case is very interesting because, of course, that came out of a case before it in South Africa, and it was part of a great big campaign run by Médecins Sans Frontières, by Oxfam and a range of others to put pressure on the pharmaceutical companies and on the US and EU governments not to proceed with the case. And it's still not a perfect resolution. In this instance, we know already that the Australian Pharmaceutical Benefit Scheme and our PharmAC are going to be prime targets for what's known as Big Pharma in the US. And they've made it very clear that that's a real priority for the US in the agreement. And that, for us, if they succeeded, would mean that the price of medicines in New Zealand would skyrocket. PharmAC's system of purchasing cheaper drugs would basically disappear. And the government bill on drugs would mean that they have to be rationed. Those who can afford health insurance would then be able to have access to some of those drugs, but poor people really wouldn't. And we need to start looking at, what the consequences for us socially and in terms of things that are important to us as citizens, what kind of effects this agreement would have on those priorities.
You mentioned the post-1984 world in which we live. Part of the argument is often characterised that New Zealand's already let down all its barriers to a large point, therefore we do stand the most to gain in making our partners do the same.
Well, as you said, really amongst the only parties that don't have an agreement here are the US and New Zealand. And what does New Zealand want? They want access for Fonterra's milk powder into the US.
And that's the one thing that's not going to happen?
And that's absolutely not going to happen. Laurie Wallach from the US, who was over here to help launch the book, had a lovely way of putting it. She said before the last election in the US, the chances of New Zealand getting dairy access were none to slim. After the last election, slim went out the window because the Tea Party people who were elected absolutely will not allow any greater access to happen. Yeah. And Australia, for example, didn't get any access for sugar. We have much less leverage than Australia, so why would we think that we're going to do better?
You suggest to me the TPPA is unlikely to happen for any number of reasons, though, and the presidency and the midterm elections being one of them as well. Should we all just relax then? It's not going to happen?
Well, the fourth round of negotiations is in Auckland starting on the week of 6 December, and they are talking about putting texts on the table. We are hearing from the US, which hosts APEC later next year in Honolulu, that they want it tied up by then. Now, it's possible, because these agreements are negotiated in secret, we don't get to see the text until it's done, which means we can't analyse, scrutinise it, that they could rush something through. And then there will be enormous pressure, not only in the US Congress, but many other places, for it to be agreed to. In New Zealand's case, the Parliament actually doesn't have any say. What would end up happening is that the Cabinet would negotiate it, sign it off, we'd get to see it afterwards, and effectively be tied in for the next 100 years to a set of rules in which we've had no say and in which democracy is trumped by the interests of those who influence the negotiations.
So just briefly to conclude, it sounds like one useful thing to agitate for would be transparency, because that worked with ACTA, the anti-counterfeiting and trade agreement. Eventually, people actually got the chance to look at that. So is that something that you think should be agitated for?
Absolutely, and that's going to be one of the points of pressure over the next couple of months. It's not only the ACTA text, but all of these countries are members of the World Trade Organization, which is not renowned for its transparency, but at least it now puts government papers up on the website and draft texts, and so we can analyse the implications. We would never dream of allowing Parliament to pass an act unseen. So why should we do that with this kind of treaty? So it is a fundamental issue of democracy.
Well, we're agreed on that. Thank you, Jane Kelsey.
That's Jane Kelsey. No ordinary deal unmasking the Trans-Pacific Partnership Free Trade Agreement is out via Bridget Williams Books as part of the Series 21 series. After the break, Svelte.